always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge podcast, brought to you on video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and get $50 worth of free lineups when you play a $5 lineup. On this fine Thursday afternoon, I am joined by SB Nation's Harrison Fagan. And Harrison, as I say that, as I say SB Nation's Harrison Fagan, this was one of the things that you and I, like, I think this is one of the edits that you made most frequently from my writing.
Yeah.
Was that specific error that, like, we do not belong to our employer.
Yeah.
You are Harrison Fagan of SB Nation.
I respect workers, unlike you. You know, I think it's just clear at this point. You think you're like, oh, SB Nation pays his paychecks. They own him.
I am my own business. So technically I'm not wrong.
You're Anthony Irwin's Anthony Irwin.
Exactly. Yeah. My. Yeah, exactly. Today on the show. So the way that this is playing out, you know, the Lakers have another extra day off here in between these games. And we could find some thing to talk about, right? We could try to force it. But I also like from time to time, especially with Harrison, you know, on the show, I like to kind of wander around a little bit. And today the topic du jour is Devin Booker ripping the NBA's referees a new one for the way that they refereed last night's game against OKC. So what we're going to do is I'll play a little snippet of Devin Booker's quote. Harrison and I will react to the quote. And then I think we're just kind of wander around this issue and kind of hit on its various angles. This does impact the Lakers. I do think it, you know, this is one of those things where, you know, a lot of people are going to point to the Lakers free throw discrepancy over the years. And I feel like that's kind of missing the point. Like that's, you know, I do also think it is worth bringing it up so long as you don't do it disingenuously. So we're going to bring up all of this stuff and we're just kind of wander around it. A reminder, please hit that like button. Please hit that share button. Turn on notifications for the show as well as for YouTube so that you get those notifications for the show. And then if you guys are listening to this in the morning via podcast, please hit that subscribe button wherever you get them, preferably on Odyssey, but anywhere you get them is perfectly fine with me. So yeah, let's start. I'll just really quickly play. This is like 30 seconds or so from Devin Booker's post-game show last night. And he starts by talking about the technical foul call that
post-game scrum. I don't think he's not one of the player podcasts. Is he? He was talking to the media.
Yes. Yeah. It was a post-game presser. Yeah. What did I say?
You said his post-game show. I was like, oh, Devin Booker's jumping on Locked On Suns after the game. He's like, you know, the free throw discrepancy is just bullshit, man. I just, but you know, first I want to tell you about Dave's killer bread.
this rant about this referee is brought to you by MeUndies. Here's Devin Booker.
Caruso, tell him to call the tech, and you know he ended up doing it. So that's one ref. In my 11 years, I haven't called a ref out by name, but James was terrible tonight, through and through. It's bad for the sport, bad for the integrity of the sport. You know, people are going to start viewing this as a WWE, you know, if they're not held responsible.
Similar thing for you on the offensive foul with Caruso, where you didn't get an explanation.
WWE, he brings up. And so the reason that I think WWE is worth kind of mentioning here, because I do think like there's a few directions that we can go. When he mentions WWE, it kind of made me wonder about like tanking, right? Like it brought me back to the conversation about tanking, where once fans feel like the final result is predetermined as it is in WWE, that starts affecting bottom lines for a lot of your corporate partners, most namely recently, you know, gambling. I think there's probably far less action on WWE results than sports results in general. And if you're betting on WWE results without just like talking to WWE writers, I would ask what you're doing with your life. But
you gotta call the tip line, man. If you're betting on WWE, it's time to call the 1-800 number. Like that, you know, that should like automatically trigger someone to like call you if you try to place that bet. It's like a trap.
Right. Well, I remember like one time I was all right. So my kids brought home a stomach bug the other day, and Avery was like the last person in the family to catch it. And she came home. She looked bad. She looked pale and stuff. And I gave her some Zofran and I gave her some Mylocon, and I told her, hey, just like try to keep these things down for now. And then she wasn't able to like it. They both bounced right back up. And so I Googled, how much Zofran can you take without ODing? And a helpline does pop up on Google. If you need help, if you are having suicidal thoughts, here's the number. And I feel like if you do make a bet on WWE, like, you know, your whatever site it is that you're using, there should be a pop-up immediately. He's like, are you sure? Do you need help? Here's this number. But yeah, no, the tanking thing, you know, and that discourse was obviously running rampant over the last couple of weeks, and it kind of felt red herringish is like in that the tanking discourse. I don't know. I think it misses a lot of what's actually kind of ailing the league, and I think this refereeing thing is something that actually is a problem that does impact eyeballs on the sport. And Devin Booker's point, you know, kind of stemming from the referee responded to Alex Caruso asking for a tee. I'm not going to go so far as to say that, like, or I don't think anybody is really willing to go so far as to say that, like, the league is rigging things for the Thunder. Thunder fans, calm down. You guys aren't that important. Yeah. What I will say, though, is that like there have been enough complaints over the course of the last couple of years, basically since Caruso got to the Thunder, that like he and Lu Dort and the rest of their defenders are allowed to play defense in such a way that if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was defended that way, that player would be suspended and potentially jailed. And like that's the part of this that I think is really kind of bothering Devin Booker here and all of their opponents and fans who root for teams that have to compete against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And when once again, as he kind of talked about, he uses WWE as an example, but once fans feel like this final result or the result in a game, it's kind of like the Scott Foster thing too, right? Once fans feel like the NBA as a league is placing their thumb even slightly on the scales, that's where fans start to kind of tune out a little bit. And to me, Harrison, I think this is like an actual real problem facing the league. Do you agree or do you think this is just kind of one of those things?
I mean, I think that the NBA for sure, you know, to your graphic has a refereeing problem. The problem is that, you know, I think that sometimes like people assign malice to incompetence. Yeah. And it's like, I don't think that there's like a grand conspiracy coming down from the league that they're like, you know, we need to win. We need to get the Oklahoma City Thunder to the finals. This is going to be really good for ratings. The huge media market. Yeah, I think it's literally the smallest media market in the league. Like, I just don't understand what the incentive would be to rig things for the Thunder. And so I think it's more of just like the Thunder have probably better than any other team learned what the refs are bad at and learned how to exploit it. Like, they're not just attacking your defense or offense or whatever. They are aware of like the various things that officials are more likely to miss and what like they can get away with in terms of physicality and in terms of selling contact and in terms of not selling contact and making it look like you didn't give that much contact. I'm skeptical that a referee called a technical because Alex Caruso told them to. I think this is one of those things where it's like Devin Booker's probably right that that did happen, but I imagine it's like the ref was probably going to call a technical anyway. You know, it's one of those things where like, you know, I'm not saying Devin Booker did this, but like if he said something about Caruso's mom and Alex Caruso's like, come on, man, you got to give him a tech for that. That's the ref didn't give him the tech because Alex Caruso, the ref gave him a tech because, you know, of what he said. And
well, so the on that play, Booker goes, so the play had already happened. The contact had already happened. Booker's falling out of bounds and he saves, air quotes on saves the ball back in bounds. And he hits, I think it's like Jalen Williams with the ball and not J-Dub, but Jalen Williams, the backup center. And Caruso then basically goes to the referee and says like, you can't throw the ball at a player after the play. That's a T, essentially. And to your point, you know, I don't think that I think the referee was probably getting ready to reward the technical before Caruso pointed it out. But same time, if you're Devin Booker and you save a basketball. Yeah, I understand why
if you're Booker, you would be mad about that. I just like, I don't think it's that simple.
Right. Like if you're Booker and like just talking about like the situation at hand, because Booker saves the ball like, he's facing away from the from Williams. He's facing away from the court, saves the ball without looking. And if you do that, and then you walk up to you know some hustle and bustle there, and you hear Caruso say, "You got to give him a T for that," and then you get a T, I would be pretty hot if I were Devin Booker too.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like yeah. I'd be like, hold on, what? And you it's combine
like
the Chris
Paul thing. It's why guys would get so irritated at him. It's like, yeah, like I'm not allowed to have my jersey untucked, but you don't have to be a tattletale. But again, right, like that's not conspiracy. That's just enforcing. It's enforcing the rules in kind of a shitty way.
Right. And so I think, and where I actually think another comparison that we can draw here between, or another link that we can draw here between this and tanking is the incentive structure. Tanking is the only foolproof way to get yourself elite, top-tier NBA talent. It's the only way, right?
I actually disagree with that. I don't think it's foolproof because we have seen the Kings. And it's well, like true. You can tank and be bad for like a number of years and just like not hit on your picks and just continue to be bad. And like it's definitely not foolproof. And I think it is a foolproof solution for is job security. Like I'm sorry to cut you off, but right now, with the way the rules are, you're talking about the incentive structure. Let's be real about what the real incentive structure is. If I'm a GM and it's like I can get 7 years of job security because I can convince my owner that this is the only way that we can move forward, that's a lot easier. Then, you know, just saying like, hey, you got to give me 7 years, just be patient, and then we'll have a star at the end. And then either you end up with a star at the end or you get fired, versus if you're like, I think we can build this thing back up. And then you make a couple wrong moves, you're fired then. And you got a lot less job security than that.
Especially now that fans have bought into tanking.
Yes.
Right. Like this is something that I think you would
areas. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like very online fans have bought into tanking. I mean, like you and I literally started the Team Tank podcast.
And we got a lot of pushback. Like a lot of Lakers fans do not accept that. Like and would not accept that.
Yeah, they did not like us.
And I don't really blame them. I mean, it sucks. It's like we were right in what the incentive structure was promoting, but that sucks. Like you shouldn't be sitting here rooting for your team to lose games. That's not sports anymore.
You're right. But it's also prudent, like to the point that we were making.
Which is why they're changing the rules. Yeah.
Right. And so, but like, I also think, you know, in the link that I'm going to draw back to the refereeing problem is it's prudent to flop, right? Yeah. So long as the referees are dumb enough to fall for it. And so long as this rule book remains so litigious that referees, and I honestly think like, I don't think it's a matter of these specific referees being bad at their jobs. I think it's an impossible job. These guys are moving so fast, and this rule book is so litigious, And it, like, remember a couple, not, I know that everybody has recently been kind of talking about, like, a few years ago where the NBA said, nope, we're not doing the grifting thing anymore. Like, I'll bring that back up.
Trae Young, your time in the sun is over. It's done.
Yeah. But like, what I do think is, I think more pertinent to this conversation is just recently, I think it was last year, the year before, the referee's like official Twitter account sent out like, you know, a series of rule changes and tweaks. And they were talking about like driving angles and like player positioning and stuff like this. And it just was so litigious that I said in the moment, I said, this is going to be a fucking disaster. This is going to be an absolute disaster. And it's because, like, for one thing, like the inherent problem with this approach, Harrison, talking about driving angles and all of this stuff, is a lot of the angles that they are describing in those videos are from above. But guess where referees referee from? Right square on. You don't have, like, a referee doesn't have the option just like float above the action. That's not something
they gotta get Monty McCutcheon on a drone cam. You know, he's like, he's it's a caucus just like navigating the RC little helicopter drone. He's like, I gotta watch.
Yeah. Finally, Kevin Durant's terrible investments can actually help somebody. but like the whole, like the, like this, this whole freaking, mess that we kind of sit in when we're watching this is like in the NFL, they kind of, and I think the NFL was kind of smart in how they did it. They were decide, remember a few years back, like most famously, there was the Dez Bryant catch against the Packers.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, you know, and I remember for a long time, it became an internet meme. It was like, I don't know what a catch is in the NFL anymore.
I don't pay that much attention to the NFL, but I just remember that there was deep philosophical discourse on what the nature of a catch was. Yes. And I was like, this cannot possibly be this complicated.
Right. And but like, I think to the NFL's credit, they've kind of simplified it. They've gone the opposite direction of what the NBA has done, where they've kind of simplified it, where it's like, this is what a catch is. And like, that's the amount of litigious debate that we're going to have about this. This is it, you know. And I'm not saying it's perfect. There are certainly calls over the course, like the Vikings last year had kind of had a touchdown reversed because like a fraction of the football like grazed a single like slightly longer piece of grass, and the tight end was not awarded the catch. And it's like, I was like, all right, we're doing a little bit too much here. But like with the NBA though, rather like Adam Silver's fix is always to become more litigious. His fix with tanking recently, fix with tanking recently was like this multi-step plan that like if you could actually see my people's eyes glaze over when they were trying to describe his tanking fixes. And it's the same thing here.
I was reading the tweets from Shams, and I was like, is he just conveying this really badly? Like, is this simpler than he is making it? And then, you know, I saw other reports on it and stuff, and I'm like, no, this is completely like indecipherable to your average person.
Right. And so like, I don't know whether it's tanking, whether it's refereeing or whatever else is kind of ailing the league. I think you could always draw this direct line back to Adam Silver and his tendencies to just thoroughly what's the opposite of oversimplifying?
Overcomplicating.
Thank you. Overcomplicating, you know, whatever issue it is that currently faces him. And again, I were, you know, with tanking's this thing that's so deeply rooted in how so many of these teams are built that is going to be something that's going to take a long time to sort out, deroot, and get out of the league's DNA. But like this whole flopping thing, we've seen them very quickly and arbitrarily just do away with it for a bit, right? We've seen it as you know the Trae Young example from a few years ago.
Yeah,
we've seen even in the middle of a season. I remember
It's just Strauss, like, sorry, tiny guys, you suck now. It doesn't, your trickery does not work anymore. It's
right.
We're playing basketball. But now.
I remember at one point a couple of seasons ago, there was this stretch where I think Tom Haberstroh and Ethan Strauss were kind of keeping an eye on this one, where out of nowhere, unders started hitting at a significant rate.
It was after the All-Star game where Adam Silver got really mad at the players for not playing hard. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to let you beat the shit out of each other. Let's see how you like it.
Right. And the league later admitted that, like, yeah, we told our referees to lighten up on some of the grifting stuff. And it's like, so hold on. You can do, like, that's been a thing that you could do this whole time. You know, like, that you could, and now, now the players got so angry about it. And every time that the league corrects this thing, the players union gets super angry about it because the players themselves say that this is too physical. This is an unsafe brand of basketball. You have a lot of bonus structures that are involved with, you know, the number of points that players score. And I think this is why, like, the players union gets so hot and bothered about this issue, where guys are like, look, if I can get to the free throw line 3-4 extra times a night, that helps me hit that bonus structure. And again, it just goes back to incentive. If we're talking about a mid-range jumper and a trip to the free throw line being worth roughly the same amount of points, right? That you gotta, you know, take into account guys missing free throws from time to time. But if, you know, either knocking down a mid-range jumper or getting all the way to the basket or whatever, if you are rewarded just the same way by just kind of, you know, like there was a play last night where Chet pump faked, then a defender purposefully jumped away from Chet, right? And Chet still, like, launched himself into the player. And it's like, if Chet it's can
perverted
get two
basketball,
point,
like,
it's, My general rule is, like, if somebody was to do any of these things in a pickup game, a fight would start. And so, like, that, you know, my fix would be like, all right, we're going to have the fight clause, right? Where if something you did would start a fight in a pickup game, we are not rewarding that. Like, it's steadfast rule here. But what Chet did there, you know, it got him 2 points. He probably wasn't going to make that mid-range jumper if he would have taken it just from where he shot it, right? Probably would have been a bad shot if he shot that mid-range jumper. What isn't a bad shot is faking it, throwing yourself into a defender, and getting to the free throw line. So just like with tanking, just like with now grifting and flopping and all that stuff, like, if the reward system is there, these guys aren't going to change their behavior. So it falls on the league to actually address this, and they have to. Like, tanking's going to be brutal, but this is something that the league has to stop.
This to me is more important than tanking, because in most years is not a tank race like we have seen this year because of the amount of top talent at the top of the draft. Like, there's a couple teams that are bad, but it's not like to this degree of, like, we're going to play Jaren Jackson Jr. in the first half and then we're going to sit him in the second one. And, you know, like, because we're doing a possession management, or, you know, whatever we're calling it. We're making up a new way to manage injuries where you can't get hurt in the first half, just the second half. That's where the danger zone is. But, like, the bigger issue to me with the league is the amount of people. It's like, go and talk to your friends about the NBA. And it's like, their complaint is, like, too much flopping, you know, like, there's, like, it's too easy to score, it's too this and that. And it's like, the NBA, some of this is, like, you know, I think the media has done a bad job of conveying how complicated defenses are now, and, like, how many different things that they're doing. And it's not just, like, a matter of just, like, beating guys up and, you know, guys aren't allowed to touch each other anymore and whatever. But there is an element of truth to that. And some of this is not just on the players. I don't want to put it all on them for, like, flopping and stuff like that. Like, I think that you should be suspended for 10 games for flopping. So I'm not saying, like, they're blameless here, but like, the NBA should just, like, have, like, a guy who just sits in a room. He's just, like, your average Joe, and he just watches every possession. And if he's like, that's a flop, then you're suspended 10 games.
Well, like, Well,
it's like ball don't stop. They just put him in a panopticon room and he just judges whether or not you flopped and you're suspended 10 games. And guys, I guarantee you that would stop all flopping. Guys would not flop if that was like, if that was the potential penalty. And then the referees, for them, they get so graded down to the minute of like every single call that they're so terrified to do the wrong thing that they're just like, let me just call a foul and then we'll review it and then we'll figure it out. Right. And then it's like, I'm not going to get in trouble. I mean, I'm less likely to get in trouble if I just call a foul and it's reviewable and it's this and it's that than if I like completely miss a call and it looks like, you know, then I get like an F grade on my final, you know, report of that possession and that affects my pay and my game assignments and whatever. And like all these guys, like they're just so terrified to get the bad grades and the bad evaluations and lose out on assignments that they're just like blowing their whistle constantly, or it's wildly inconsistent because they're under all this pressure. And like officiating is an art. It's not a science. And, you know, like the reason it's like, I don't think that we should totally go back to the way the games were officiated in like the 90s and early 2000s or whatever, where it's like there were guys like, you know, you're like your Joey Crawfords who were like trying to be like, you know, they thought somebody was buying a ticket to come see them. I'm not saying we need to see that come back, but like we need, you know, a referee to just be able to say like, get up. I'm not calling that. Get up. Like, I don't care. You know, and there's just none of that right now. There's not that discretion of just like, you know what? I'm just not calling that bullshit, except for with Luka, I guess. Luka is the only one where they're just like, I'm just not calling that bullshit. Fuck you, dude. Like, I'll take the F on my evaluation. Like, you screamed at me in seven different languages tonight, you know, over things that you were clearly wrong about. And like, you know, you are now like on timeout or you're on whistle penalty. But for everyone else, it's just like they're, and then it's wildly inconsistent.
I want to talk, we'll come back to the Luka and the Lakers part of this too, because somebody who was listening to the show who is looking for, like there, you just know that there's some OKC fan who's just like, you know what, how dare you bring up my team when your team benefits? So I promise we'll get to
my question
Lakers
is why you are about to waltz to another championship. Why are you watching this podcast looking for things to be mad about? Just like enjoy your team just kicking the shit out of everyone in front of them. Like,
that's
honestly,
that's the thing that probably annoys me the most with this era of Thunder fandom. Like with past years, I don't know. Like if anybody criticizes the Thunder even a little bit or even hints at criticism, it becomes this thing in this like flurry of dweebs just show up in your mentions and it's just like, it's just go away. But anyway, like what I wanted to kind of go back to for a second was with the with referees and stuff like this is the cons, like where I think they get themselves into the most trouble is with this replay system and with, oh no. All right. I remember the point that I was actually going to make. Chris Finch was I was trying to find it and I did it really poorly. And here I am. But
you know, honestly, I couldn't even tell. So you were doing great at verbally, because I've done that before. And I feel like I do a less good job at it where I'm like trying to remember what I was actually going to say and just like talking. I
could have gotten there.
I did not realize that you had no idea where you were going.
I probably could have gotten there like eventually without saying, oh, nope, I found it. So my bad. But what I was going to bring up was Chris Finch, I thought, gave a super interesting quote after one of his games against the Nuggets, where he made the point that, and again, going back to the incentive structure here, some players, they lean in, they get the contact, and they are often or more frequently rewarded for falling back off of that contact, right? Like for getting the contact and then altering course, thus highlighting the impact that just occurred with the defender, and that notifies the referee a call has to be made here. Whereas the players who try to go through that contact and continue to try to make that basketball play, they are actually docked because LeBron, the referees are going to think that was not enough contact to knock you off of course, therefore no foul, right? And that's why when you watch LeBron play I think Steph gets this too, oddly enough. But when you watch those guys who continue to try to Steph's make a always basketball,
trying to make the shot. Steph is never like grifting. And like LeBron is just strong enough that it's like, yeah, you can foul him. He's still going to get a legitimate shot, but that doesn't mean it's not a foul, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And so like, and I think that is such an important point to make as part of this conversation here, yeah, where it's like, you know, you watch Shea and you watch the play that I watched with Chet earlier. And look, Luka is part of this too. I actually think like people are going to bring Austin Reeves up. I actually think Austin more frequently tries to actually get a good shot up on
Austin always some tries to get plays. A good shot up. But Austin yeah. also has the like he kind of looks pathetic thing going for him. And so I think that's part of the whistle is like it just looks really sad when he gets hit because he's like, again, he's gotten stronger over the years, but he is yeah. by NBA standards not the strongest dude. He's a little wispy.
Right.
And so there's like a little bit of like, come on, man, you can't just shove him. He's just a baby. Like you can't.
But like that's the part of this that I think like this I think is the start of the fix here is, and this was the start of their fix a few years back where it's like, you have to make a basketball play to have it at the very least yes. be
yeah.
a shooting foul. Right.
Yeah.
And this is often what referees kind of point to with Luka when he's been screaming at them all game. And he doesn't like when they do call the foul, but they don't want to reward him with free throws. They're like, no, man, you weren't yeah. shooting. That wasn't a basketball play, which just leads to more yelling. And boy, that relationship sure is healthy. But like, you know, when we talk about like grander macro level fixes here for what ails the league right now, that has to be the starting point where you have to reward the guys who are still trying to make a basketball play, because that's still watchable. There is no completely getting rid of grifting. There is no completely getting rid of guys who are going to try to take advantage of the rules, right? We've seen it with the gather step where guys are taking like three steps while their hand is still technically on top of the ball. Then they put their hands on, you know, they bring the second hand to the basketball. Then they can take another two steps. And all of a sudden you're talking about five steps without dribbling. And people are like, how wasn't that travel? And you're going to have
it's called the
B-ball breakdowns break. Of the world. Yeah, you're going to have like the B-ball breakdowns of the world who are going to be like, you know, Coach Nick, who does like do a good job of explaining why it technically isn't a travel anymore. But it just it flies so thoroughly in the face of the basketball that we all grew up watching that people
yeah,
are going
to
like,
I don't like it. I don't care travel. By the rules. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not.
That's a travel. Yeah. You know, and I think like it's the same thing where we watch these guys.
You would not
their
be able to explain
throws.
That. Be like, no, in the pickup game, like, no, I was actually, if you see where I caught the ball, I was actually doing a gather step. And
right.
It's like, no, like they're going to say like, no, that's bullshit. You traveled. Check ball.
It's the fight rule. If somebody mentions fucking gather step in a pickup game, there's going to be a fight. Like there's going to be a fight. Like that's how this is going to play out. And I think.
Ironically, given all of this, Devin Booker, the like no double teams in a pickup game guy, Devin Booker definitely seems like he would argue that he did a gather step in a pickup game. You know, he'd be the guy.
Well, what's funny too is that like this is coming from Devin Booker, somebody who hasn't taken a regular looking jumper in forever. Like that guy's always trying to lean in and get contact and stuff like that. Like this is something that this is like there is no non-guilty party here. They're like, yeah. Even Victor Wembanyama was like doing this whole like, oh, there's an ethical
oh
way to play
God.
Basketball. Motherfucker,
it's like, buddy,
I see
you are on the floor. Every I Wemby, you are awesome. You would have been my pick for MVP. I do not want to hear it from you. You are on yeah. the floor like every other possession.
He may or may not have concussed himself. Grifting.
Like, oh, okay. That, okay. You know. Relax.
But like what I think, though, that like. This is something that like all fan bases, we all need to come together and agree that your fan, like the team that you root for is not the good team here. Luka grifts, Austin grifts, you know, Jokic.
We're not going to get
grifts.
Nuggets fans to agree to that. They are in a battle of good and evil through basketball. You know,
I'm sorry. I love the DNVR guys. We're both very friendly with those guys, but you're fucking yeah. wrong. You're wrong. Like, I'm sorry. Jokic grifts like a mother bleeper. Like,
you know, it's like, I don't actually like for guys like Jokic and Luka and like Shea and Wemby, it's like, I don't even think, like, obviously they do a little grifty stuff, whatever. Like, I feel like so often they've just generated a legitimate advantage that then it's like they're taking contact and now they have to sell it to get the call instead of just like making a play and getting the reward of like, no, this guy did an illegal thing to try and stop you. But it's like, you have to sell it and you have to grift a little bit. And it's like, most of the time, it's not like, you know, it's not like they're like creating a foul out of thin air, like just trying to entice a foul or whatever. It's like Shea a lot of the times is like getting downhill and he does take legitimate contact. And it's like, yeah, that's a foul. But it also like he knows the incentive structure of the game. He wants to get to the line. He wants to whatever. And so he has to sell it. And it's like Luka does the same thing. Jokic does the same thing. All the good players do it.
I think one foul that I would just like to see go
Except
away.
Steph, and again, really. They were Steph getting doesn't rid of really, it. Yeah, like, you know, Steph is like one of the guys where it's like he's just taking the horse shot. You know, he's not.
The grift that I would like to see go away, and this is what's so annoying, is that like under David Stern, if they said like the swing through, remember the swing through was a thing. I don't think Adam Silver was the commissioner back at the onset.
It was either very early Adam Silver or very late David Stern, because it was it was KD, I remember, was like the big target of that.
Right. And I remember like they basically said, hey, that's no longer a shooting foul anymore. That's not a natural shooting motion. That's no longer a shooting foul. And they stuck to it. They said that's not a shooting foul, and that's what makes me think it was a David Stern thing and not an Adam Silver thing. Like eventually
there
Adam
would have
Silver's
been seven committees that had to convene and decide like what even is a swing through and what constitutes it in legal terms.
Well, and eventually he would just like decide, you know what, you can have this foul. Like,
yeah, like Kevin Durant would call him and he'd be like, yeah, you're right, Kevin. You should be able to do that. I'm sorry. I don't know basketball.
He's like going from like David Stern, who is so like stubborn and mean.
You can see why Adam was a good counterbalance to him. But the problem is that once like Adam was put into power, it's like you need the asshole also.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Yeah. He just gives off too much stepdad.
Like I want Mark Tatum going around like, you know, threatening to like, you know, like cut your brake lines or whatever. If you don't stop like trying to fake your way into shooting fouls.
Like, did you ever watch Liar Liar growing up, the Jim Carrey movie?
No.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. Never saw it. I'm aware of the concept. I understand. It's like he like just starts telling the truth at all times, right?
Yeah, it's one of his like best movies. It's so good.
I was never a Jim Carrey guy.
But that's like one of the rare, like it's a good balance of Jim Carrey-ness in that movie. Like, I understand what you're saying. Like I don't love the what's it called when nature calls
Ace Ventura.
And it's Ace, like I didn't really love Ace Ventura that much.
Ironically, I saw that one.
It's like too much Jim Carrey in that one.
Yeah,
but I thought Liar Liar was like a perfect balance of like, and he actually like a really heartfelt portrayal. Anyway. There's a stepfather in Liar Liar who you know, Jim Carrey's thing with his son is the claw, right? And he does this really good like, it's the claw. And then the stepfather shows up and he tries to like do the claw for his stepson, and he does it with like one finger and it's super stiff, and it's like it's just, and even like the you know, his girlfriend, right, who's son, he's just like, no, don't do that one.
Yeah,
like let's just leave that alone. And I feel like Adam Silver is just like perpetually the stepdad from Liar Liar. Like he's just and everybody is looking at him like, dude, just have a spine one time. But I think really like that's kind of, you know, where they need to go here is like get back to focusing on what is a basketball play. Focus on what is trying to get to the, you know, trying to not like the advantage gained shouldn't be the free throws that you shoot. The advantage gained needs to be an improved likelihood of making a basket that the defender needs to stop in and stop. Yeah. And that's where I think, and by the way, like, I know that they keep on talking about like, oh, the ratings were up this year and attendance was up and all of this stuff. And it's like, okay, pat on your back. I don't believe those numbers even a little bit, but fine. If you want to go off of that, fine.
Wow. Wow. Amazon, the company that we have no insight into how they collect their data or like what they did. They said the numbers were up. Okay. Well, you know, I trust Bezos.
Yeah. I mean, I love that Amazon is telling us that like all of their stuff gets watched like way more than anything else, but they also keep on increasing the prices for us to watch that stuff because clearly the numbers aren't coming in at the rate that they need to, or else they would not need to raise those prices. But yeah, like this whole debate about, you know, the health of the league, and like, I'm not going to sit here and cry wolf and say that the league is dying or anything like that. But I do think from a sheer watchability standpoint, from a sheer neighbors get together and we're talking about basketball standpoint, that has not happened basically other than the day that the Luka trade went down. Other than that, my neighbors never talk about basketball here, and they used to. Like, that is a thing. My neighbor across the street, son plays basketball and he's not really interested in talking about it, you know, and I know this is purely anecdotal, but I bet you go around and think of how many actual conversations that you have with your friends, your peers, all of that stuff that actually involves the NBA and the basketball that's being played. And it rarely happens. It's always about the trade rumors, and it's always about, like, you know, it's mostly trade rumors. But like, the league needs to find a way to get
it's soft, and you know, like, or I just don't like these guys. The new generation of players, they're just so entitled or whatever.
Right. And I know that, like, you know, you're not going to turn everybody back around on this, but I do think that there needs to be more of an effort paid to the basketball that we are watching, you know, and the basketball that like, you know, that. Adam Silver can't continue to bury his head in the sand and pretend that this sport itself is as watchable as it can possibly be. And, I have zero faith whatsoever that he'll actually be able to do it because he's Adam Silver, but without it, it is something that needs to be addressed. Let's segue really quickly to the series that the Lakers find themselves in right now. You and I don't think have talked basically since the beginning of the series. What did you think going in? Like, did you think that this was a possibility?
Yes, and we talked about this. Remember we talked a lot in the lead up of like, if there's one team that they could maybe beat, it would be like in their current state, it would be the Rockets. And that was why I wanted this matchup. And, you know, I'll tell you, I don't remember if I told you, did I tell you my accidental gambling story yet off the air?
The one with Raj?
No, on game one. Anyway,
go ahead and tell it.
Yeah. So I am, I don't sports gamble. You know this about me, and probably anyone who listens to this podcast, it will not be surprised to know that I am risk averse. And I don't generally just like assume that I'm smarter than whoever sets the odds for these things or whatever, but the way the Lakers were being talked about and the way the Rockets were being talked about going into this series was driving me insane. Like, yeah. People were talking about the Rockets like there was like they were going to sweep. And I was like, have you watched this team? They are not good. I know the Lakers are really banged up and they're hurt and they're missing their two top guys and whatever, but this Rockets team sucks. And, you know, they're not like the theoretical team.
And they hate each other.
They were going to be going. Yeah, that too. Well, no, according to their fans, it's all fine. They all like each other. The KD group chat was fake. Fake news. Stop spreading that he had another burner account.
He's like, stop tweeting for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, no. Around the same time, he just stopped tweeting. It's, you know, he's totally innocent. I just feel so bad for KD. Like the amount of benefit, KD gets a benefit, a generational benefit of the doubt from the media, where it's like, you know, oh man, I can't believe that like another Kevin Durant team is just like, they have bad vibes and there's problems with the coach and, you know, they're playing really dumb offense and like, there's no sort of, it's just like the offense seems to be just like hand the ball to KD and like, why are they not getting him some help? You know, why are they not running more off ball sets? to set him up for success. And it's like, you know, I don't know. This is the third team in a row that this has happened. I think maybe like this is the way KD wants to play, and he is sort of bad vibes on wheels. But anyway, like all this to say, I was extremely skeptical that this was going to be a walkover series for the Rockets, even with the guys that the Lakers are missing. Mm-hmm. And so going into game one, I woke up that morning and I was like, you know, I just have a really good feeling about the Lakers in this series. Like, it's just insane the way that people are talking about them, the odds. Like, they had in the place that I put some money down, they had 35% odds to win, like, mm-hmm. I thought the series. And so I put down $100, and I was like, I think that they could very easily cash this for me. Then Kevin Durant got hurt a couple hours later, and frankly, I was surprised I didn't get like investigated or something for having like inside knowledge. But it would be very funny. I have a scoop
for $100
Durant injury. Like me, yeah. Like, you know, a Lakers guy who's not even that connected. And I chose to use this to put down $100.
$100. Yeah.
Yeah. Just that. But so I put it down on what I thought was the Lakers to win the series. And then because I'm such an inexperienced sports gambler, I then realized that I had accidentally put it down on the Lakers to just win game one. So I was living and dying with every single little Rockets run in game one. And I was like, that was as happy as I have been for a Lakers win in years, not just because of the vibe, but because like I was chasing the dragon during that game. And just like, I was on the exercise bike just to like keep myself like engaged on something. Like, I was just like, I was living and dying with everything. I was like, you can't give him that call. This is BS. And then I won $100.
The reason I'm laughing so hard, Harrison, is because like you and I have been doing this like for a decade, right? Like
10 plus years. Yeah.
Yeah. And like at this point, I know you well enough, Harrison, that when Mia sent out that viral tweet of the LeBron meme, right, where she's like, looking at you like, hey, yeah, wrap up our hangout here so that we can get going. And I knew you so well, or I know you so well, that I replied to her and was like, hey, Harrison is probably the one like who didn't I'm sure Harrison would be so, I forget what exactly I said, but like Harrison was ready to go too. No, I
100% did not want to be there in the first place. Right, it's like you're acting like I dragged you somewhere. Like that's a thing that ever happens.
Right. And so like that was my response. And you literally showed me a text that was essentially my tweet that you sent completely. And so I say all of that to say that I know you really, really well. And there are very few things I would pay more money for than to have been able to be in that room with you for that game.
I was by myself for a reason. My wife was working the game. I was telling the cats to leave me alone. I was sweating that out. Because I felt so stupid for like picking the wrong option. And then when I immediately went and bought dinner and for Mia that night and like went and picked her up from work. And, you know, like it ended up being a great night. But yeah, suffice to say, like I was optimistic about the Lakers' chances going into the series. Even I did not think like they were going to go 2-0 and sort of dominate the same way Kevin Durant or no Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I was also optimistic. I also have money on the Lakers winning the series, not accidentally.
Are you sure? Did you double check? Because I, you know, people make that mistake.
And so like, but like my thinking on it was the odds are just too insane. Like no team with the vibes as bad as the Rockets should have the kind of odds that were attached to win a series. And so that's why I
say nothing of, you know, if you just obviously like almost every fan base hates their coach. But if you read Rockets fans tweets about Ime this year, like it was rising to Byron Scott levels.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's really bad when beat reporters who have to talk to him frequently are kind of like, you know,
you couldn't give Reeves 5 more minutes.
And it's funny that like, and you know, so Ime, really,
when you
really
started
bad,
calling the whole team bitch in the third time out in a row, did you think that was really going to be what inspired them?
But it's also like a really bad sign that Ime has to tell people in a scrum after practice that, yes, fine, Reed Shepard's going to get more minutes. Like, it's just, and you could see a lot of this coming, like, but as far as like the Rockets vibes thing. And yet you still have to be good enough to take advantage of those vibes. Yeah. And what has really kind of blown me away, especially in rewatching it, games one and two. And then I also, obviously before the series, watched the two wins that the Lakers had back to back in Houston before this. And in watching all of those games, there's this weird thing that happens in sports where you just have confidence in a matchup, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, you'll have, you know, pitchers who know they have a batter's number. You'll have, like, you know, there's a golf course that I play most frequently, the third hole, the drive on that hole, for some reason, I am just very comfortable with. And in this case, you can see that belief from the Lakers. It just kind of oozes out of them in this matchup where they're just like,
it's like, yeah, we got these guys. Like, we're not worried about this.
Yeah.
We have these.
You
can't fool me. I am familiar with your game, to quote Ross.
Right.
You know, they're right. Very familiar with the Rockets, like, number one move of take a shot, try to get a rebound, and then take another shot. Or, you know, Pat, turn the ball over like you've never seen a double team before. You know?
Exactly. But it's also, they also, like, because you still have to execute on that belief, and you still have to play hard enough to take advantage of that belief and take advantage of these vibes. And that's the part of it that really surprises me, not just in this series specifically, but this was a team, Harrison, that, like, the worst thing that could possibly happen to this team was them getting confident, because you knew that they were going to have some stupid loss. They were going to take some team too lightly. They were going to, you know, they would, and yet for some reason in March, and then for some reason in this matchup and in this spot, it's so impressive to see that kind of turned on its head, where they have the belief that they can, or maybe even will, beat this Rockets team in this series, but they're also not letting that eat into how hard they're playing against them.
Yeah.
And that's really important.
And it's a hard balance to strike of, like, we know we can beat these guys, but we know that we can only do it if we play at this level of effort.
And like, to Houston's credit, when the Lakers do, like, take their foot off of the gas a little bit, or when they do just kind of, like, slip into, you know, bad habits again, you do see them once again kind of, like, Houston does go on a run that cuts a 15-point lead down to two. You know, Houston does, you know, make them look pretty bad with the live ball turnovers and offensive rebounds and stuff like that. But then again, the Lakers kind of, you know, remember, oh, yep, that's right, we have to play this way, this is how we beat them. And then they pretty methodically, over games one and two, despite giving up leads or whatever, go right back to, you know, playing the way that they need to. All right, so we have two pieces of breaking news here. First off, that the Bucks are hiring Taylor Jenkins, former Grizzlies coach, to be their new head coach.
I was really hoping they were just going to promote Darvin.
The Lakers are playing against Darvin currently, so I guess the league can't have two of them.
That's disrespectful. I mean, he
to Darvin.
I think to Ime still. Again, like, I think, you know, he's a limited coach, but I think he's shown maybe a little bit more ability than Darvin has.
Okay. He also may have just coached.
I also compared him to Byron Scott this episode. So who's being more disrespectful? You know, it's, I don't know.
So the other piece of breaking news here that does immediately or potentially impact the Lakers is that Jalen Williams, J-Dub, the good one in OKC, he is week to week with a hamstring strain, something he has been dealing with all year.
All year.
And I would say, you know, to those who were, like, hoping to get Luka back, is this is the concern, right? This is the like the thing that you know you're always worried about with these soft tissue injuries. So whether it's Luka coming back with the injections in his hamstring, or whether it's Austin coming back with his, as he deals with his oblique strain.
Yeah, I was going to say
both parties need to be very careful.
Europe to get the super soldier serum though, so it is a little different.
I guess they never did it over the Williams has had a really tough injury year, right? Because he had
two years. Really. He was like, he was banged up throughout their whole run last year. He was playing through like a busted up hand.
His wrist. He needed to get off season surgery on it.
Yeah. He's like, it honestly reminded me of like when Kobe was like two of my fingers are broken, but it's fine because I just taped them together and I learned to adjust my jump shot to like come off of a different fingertip. It's like, these guys are insane. Like I think the level of stuff Kobe was able to do.
He said something along the lines of like, now that they're broken, they can't get worse. So it's easier to just play. I remember
this. Yeah. he was so crazy.
But J-Dub, like he had off-season surgery on his wrist after their season ended, then got surgery right before
there was an infection or they messed up the bolt or something. There was like some problem with it.
Yeah, they needed to clean up the first surgery, and that was right before, so that's why he missed initially. Then he comes in and immediately pulls a hammy, gets a grade, I think, 2 hamstring strain.
Yeah.
And then comes back from it, and it just kind of nags him over the course of the year. And, you know, now he's considered week to week, which, you know, if you're the Lakers and you're looking at the series and all you're looking for, Harrison, is like glimmers of hope, I think, you know, if you're this team. And I think with the way that LeBron is playing, the way that Luke Kennard is playing, with the way that I went back and watched the games 1 and 2 specifically, and I wanted to watch for like what, because Vando and Jake, they had 0 points combined in game 2, and yet like the Lakers clearly, you know, need those guys out there on the court, and it made me feel a lot better about their lack of offensive production because of the way that they're defending on the wing. You know, so like you got that kind of wing defense. You got, you know, Rui is knocking down timely jumpers. And that's something that Rui does in the postseason. So, like, I don't think that's going anywhere. And then, you know, Luke Kennard is apparently.
Rui is a playoff riser. He's still a flawed player, but Rui, like, has shown he will deliver in big moments if you set him up with the opportunity. Like, he's not going to be able to guard Jokic. Like, he's still going to be a defensive liability at times, but, like, he's a guy that steps his game up in the playoffs. Like, we've seen that year after year after year.
Yeah, and so, like, I don't know, where I kind of wind up, given all of everything, like, the way that the Lakers look right now, this news here as far as J-Dub goes, and I would still obviously, you know, OKC should be huge favorites.
I will not be putting $100 down on the Lakers in that series. Yeah.
But I, you know, there's a glimmer of hope there, you know.
Yeah.
And when you consider where the Lakers were at various points over the course of the season, even asking for a glimmer of hope back then seemed ridiculous, you know. But
yeah.
But here we stand, and I think that's beneficial. So let's wrap this thing up here.
I was just gonna say, like, do you think Reed Shepard and his agent are like watching these games and what JJ is doing for Luke Kennard, and they're like trying to line up a trade this offseason? They're like, I need to be in the podcast offense. Like, this is
also the defense. Like,
yeah,
the fact that the Lakers, you know, because that's often kind of the knock on Kennard, is that eventually some team's going to play him off of the court, you know, just by attacking him so much. And the Lakers have found ways to really kind of mitigate against that concern with Luke in ways that, like,
he may just, like, I don't know, like, what, like, mind telepathy JJ has done to him or whatever, but like he's so not scared to shoot now, and it's like incredible to watch. Like, he was always a guy that would start to get gun shy or, like, you know, try and move the ball and like make the right play or whatever, and like, you know, he's clearly been told, like, if you are open, you are the guy, shoot it. Like, you, it's you. You are not going to get yelled at. You are not going to get benched. Like, if you feel like you were open to take a shot, take it.
If anything, I think the move is always like bench the guy for passing up on a shot, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what we'll sometimes see. All right. I just realized I have to pick up Avery in 60 seconds. So I'm going to get to, we have two super comments, which means we have to play this one. Fuck Washington! All right, Brandon Oeming, I'm going to take your questions back to back. So first you say no more Bronny minutes play, just play Nick Smith Jr. those 5 minutes. Oh, you say it twice. So there's both of those. So I don't know. I think Bronny has a higher floor than Nick Smith Jr. And I think the Lakers like that he is athletic enough to just not be attacked while also being, you know, obviously not much of an offensive threat. But, and then I also think like the Lakers think that that's a way to get a little extra out of LeBron, which
that's exactly what I was going to say. It's like LeBron is not getting extra juiced for Nick Smith Jr. minutes, you know, with all due respect. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that, you know, there is an intangible benefit to LeBron being like, oh, fuck yeah. Like I get to play in a playoff game with my son. Like this is, you know, now I'm juiced. You know,
yeah.
And this is, I think there is some intangible benefit to that. And I'm not saying that's the only reason Bronny's playing. He has shown that he is like, he is an NBA caliber ninth or 10th man, like, you know, like in the right situation.
11th or 12th, but yeah.
Okay. Well, in the right situation and mm-hmm. like, he's not going to kill you in 5 minutes or like get embarrassed. You know, he's going to, mm-hmm. he's not the best player, but he's not the worst player. And I think he's like capable enough that if he gives you any extra little juice with LeBron, I think that's worth it.
Yeah, I think it's all of those things. The Lakers have survived the Bronny minutes so far.
Yeah, he's been fine. Which... I think like there's also you know, there are a lot worse guys that have played in playoff games to make like your star happy.
Yeah, like Alperen Şengün, you know.
No, that's making a star unhappy. Yeah, it's like,
like actively KD had his way. Kevin Durant.
Şengün would be benched. It's like, can you donate your legs to Steven Adams? Can we just chop him in half?
There was a tweet. I probably shouldn't even repeat it. But
No. You can't. You can't. Come on. You're going to get... No.
It was poking fun at the way that Alperen runs and... The laugh.
The one of the ref running backwards saying that he runs like this, what made me laugh very hard.
just, oh my God.
They're like, what if we made more obviously fraudulent Sabonis and then just like got him an all-star spot?
Yeah, it's just, it's crazy. Like I have been just so.
Did you see his quote from practice today?
About like they are better at like making shots.
It's funny because he's not even wrong, but it's just such a funny cope to say like out loud and like say to the media is like, we're beating them at every stat but making shots. It's like, well, I have some news for you about which stat wins the game.
Oh man, never change.
The scoreboard is most influenced by which team makes the most shots. I would say.
Do you think they'll like him in Milwaukee next year?
Giannis and KD in Houston under Ime, like sign me up.
Yes. I'm
the like triple bylined athletic story on why that season went wrong next year worth the yearly price of admission. Like the Sam Amick, you know, like whoever else is going to be in on that, like they have a Rockets guy, right? You know, like it's like the triple byline, like, you know, here's what went wrong in Houston that drops like 5 minutes after the buzzer on the Giannis Ime KD team. I need it.
Yeah. They just need Bradley Beal.
No income tax in Houston. Giannis is going to be psyched.
Mm-hmm. Telling you. All right. I do really have to run because I am now late to pick up.
Don't leave your daughter alone.
thank you everybody for tuning in. Rate, subscribe, review, hit that like button, all of that good stuff. And until the next time you guys hear from us, which is going to be tomorrow afternoon with Pete to preview game 3 and then potentially after game 3 with Raj. Exciting time, busy time. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Avery, I'm on my way.